from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Scotty, don't let me go.
I'm here. I've got you.
I'm so afraid.
Some of the most memorable moments in film history have been shot in San Francisco, from Madeline's plunge into the churning water at Fort Point in Hitchcock's Vertigo to Clint Eastwood's Dirty Harry scouring North Beach for a serial killer. A new exhibit at the San Francisco Museum and Historical Society celebrates the city's role in the movies, both as a favorite location and as creative hub. What are your picks for San Francisco's greatest moments on celluloid? Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. That's Jeanette MacDonald singing the title song from the 1936 film San Francisco, one of the many movies that have become singularly identified with San Francisco. The Maltese Falcon, Vertigo, The Days of Wine and Roses, Bullet, Conversation, Take the Money and Run, Basic Instinct. The San Francisco Museum and Historical Society highlights, through reels, posters, photos, and vintage cameras and props, 132 years of Bay Area film history in a new exhibit called The Stuff Dreams Are Made Of, San Francisco and the Movies, which runs through the 24th of June at the Historic Old Mint, which is at 5th and Mission. And in this forum hour, we discuss San Francisco and the movies, and we ask you, our listeners, what your picks are for the city's greatest moments in film. You can post them now on our website and the KQED Forum Facebook page. The website, of course, is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. And, of course, you can call us in the course of this hour, too, and I'll give out the phone number when it's time for you to call. And you can also, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org. Let me tell you who's joining us. Here in the studio, we have Miguel Pendas, who is a board member of the San Francisco Museum and Historical Society and curated The Stuff That Dreams Are Made Of, San Francisco and the Movies, which, as I said, is an exhibition of the Old Mint, which runs through June 24th. Welcome, Miguel.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you. Also good to have Eddie Muller back on Forum, founder and president of the Film Noir Foundation, which sponsors Noir City, the annual San Francisco Film Noir Festival. Several noir posters from his collection are on display at the exhibition. We'll talk about those. Eddie, good to have you back.
Nice to be back, Michael. Thanks.
And we have John Van Buskirk with us as well, author of Celluloid San Francisco, The Film Lover's Guide to Bay Area Movie Locations. Welcome.
Hi.
John, good to have you, too.
Actually, it's Jim.
Jim, excuse me.
John is my brother.
John, all right. Well, he's welcome, too, in spirit. Jim Van Buskirk here with us in studio. Let me begin by talking about this exhibit that you have curated, Miguel Pendas, here with us in studio. And as I say, it goes back really all the way to 1880 to today. Very ambitious exhibit. I saw the video from 1906 of A Trip Down Market Street, which is in itself fascinating to watch, but we're going back to Westerns made in East Bay with Bronco Billy and Charlie Chaplin's The Tramp. I mean, there's a lot there in the early stages.
Yeah, there is. San Francisco was a real hub of filmmaking in the early silent era. And in fact, we can even lay claim to the invention of moving pictures to be in this area with the work of Edward Muybridge, who is the first person that was ever able to take a photographic image that froze motion. And people had been trying to do this for a long time, but Muybridge was he was kind of a wacky inventor. He invented his own shutter and his own process for the film and so on, and was able to freeze motion. And then he got this completely inspired idea to have 12 cameras in a row and have a horse gallop past. And so it would take 12 pictures in sequence, which could then be projected and something similar to a zoetrope toy, and it created the illusion of a moving image. He was really quite a unique person.
Well, there's a lot of that history, that cinematic and technical history here, and the Old Mint is an appropriate place. I know you're trying to raise money to make it more of a historical place. Lon Chaney's silent film, in fact, The Penalty, was filmed at the Old Mint, as I know Jim Van Buskirk and probably Eddie Muller know. You recently had an event here in town in conjunction with this exhibit. Kim Novak came. She was guest of honor, showed paintings of hers. I associated her mainly with the love of animals. Didn't know she was a painter, but you learn a lot in the course of this. And you learn a lot about some of the famous movies, like, well, Vertigo, shot at Fort Point. Go back to the presence of Pixar here and Lucasfilms. And there's just a lot of rich history here. But you have a section called Cars, Cops, Cocktails.
Right.
Talk about that.
Well, there was a whole it was a little easier, I think, with the silent era and with the noir era and some other things to focus in on something. And then we had all these decades of films that are more recent. And there's no way we were going to give a thorough picture or anything like that. So I thought, okay, let's just try to have fun with this. And I started thinking about it. And there are so many cop movies set in San Francisco, Bullet, Dirty Harry. There are so many car chases in San Francisco films. And then a particular interest of mine is I always look for the cocktails. What are they having there? So I thought, let's just have fun with this. And so we have some panels in that room that show you stills from certain films, kind of cherry-picked films and scenes, and talk about the film and then ask trivia questions. Like, for example, Dirty Harry, he's sitting in a diner downtown San Francisco before this bank robbery is about to take place out there. He didn't know it's going to happen. And he goes out and foils it, and that's where he delivers his great line.
Hold it. Let's hear it.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire six shots or only five? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But Ian, this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, and that Magnum is sitting there in that exhibit that we're talking about here with the curator, Miguel Pendas. And Eddie Muller, there's a whole noir section as well. Some of those posters actually come from your collection. I saw the poster, one of the first that you collected, I guess, with Gary Meyer. You guys worked together in collecting some of that work?
Well,
Born to Kill, I'm thinking of.
Yes, Born to Kill was, the first poster that I really sought out as a collector. But I have to ask, what were you going to say about the Dirty Harry clip? You were leading up to something. It was a trivia question.
The trivia question is, what is Dirty Harry having for lunch
ask a tough one, Miguel.
As the bank robbery is taking place outside the diner.
Eddie, thank you for redirecting that. You know what? We'll let that question hang. If anybody knows the answer, you can call in or you can write and let us know. Yeah.
And think about the long barrel of a .44 Magnum. And then think, what was he having for lunch?
You don't want to go too far with the symbolism, I don't think.
Was that at Ernie's?
No. This was at...
Ernie's is in so many of these movies, actually. I mean,
oh, really?
Famous Ernie's restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these movies that are shot in San Francisco. Where were they at that lunch scene?
Well, they were actually... in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You have to be careful sometimes when you go there. It's like, oh, no, that one
Well,
was,
the streets of San Francisco were entirely shot in Los Angeles, and Eddie, almost entirely. But Eddie, the lineup was really the precursor to all this, wasn't it?
Interesting.
For Dirty Harry,
In fact, the lineup, Dirty Harry probably wouldn't have been shot in San Francisco were it not for the fact that Don Siegel had already made the lineup here in the late 1950s, based on, the San Francisco, somebody will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the lineup, I believe, was originally San Francisco Beat. There was a television series.
I remember it. Yeah.
And then it was somehow morphed into this other show, and the lineup, the film, was the guys from the TV show in a feature film version. I mean, very... intriguing. The villains, of course, were the stars of the movie version of the lineup. The cops were kind of boring.
Well, I love those old posters. There's one for Raw Deal, too, but the one that we talked about just a moment ago, Born to Kill, from 1947 film, The Coolest Killer a Woman Ever Loved.
Yeah. It's funny, though, Michael. I when I did my first book on film noir, Dark City, I said, when I'm done and everything is finished, I'm going to treat myself to a movie poster that I always wanted. That was going to be my reward for finishing the book, and that poster was Born to Kill. But you end up chasing the dragon with movie posters, because then it was like, well, I'll just get the Raw Deal poster too. And now I have hundreds and hundreds of them.
It becomes an addiction almost. And San Francisco was almost addictive for filmmakers. I mean, they were coming here, especially noir films. Why do you suppose that? Is it a lot to do with the fog?
It certainly had something to do with the fog. I think it was San Francisco geographically is perfect for movie makers, and it has a very mysterious history. It's like an easy exotica for Hollywood. They don't have to go very far. It's so different from Los Angeles in terms of what is offered here, in terms of the, if there's such a word as verticality, the fact that the city has hills and you get different looks in the frame that you don't see at all in Los Angeles. There's a claustrophobic aspect to it that I think made it very suitable for noir. There's a sense of entrapment.
And kind of mysteriousness, too, as well as,
absolutely,
of course, the beauty of San Francisco. But, you know, this whole noir world, I thought maybe we'd hear another cut that you could comment on. And this is from the landmark Art Deco apartment at 1360 Montgomery Street, which has become a tourist attraction thanks to Dark Passage, the film 1947. And it's the apartment where Lauren Bacall helps hide framed convict Humphrey Bogart. Let's hear the clip.
You think I'd ever let them know where you were?
Could be.
That's why you won't tell me.
Yes, that's why.
No, it isn't. You won't tell me because you think I'll come there. You think I'd follow you.
You'd be insane to follow me.
Was I insane to pick you up on the road? Was I crazy to let you stay here?
Just hearing that voice of Bacall. We won't even go into the effect it has on me, but Dark Passage sort of made good use of San Francisco, didn't it, Eddie?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all over the place. And what I love about it, see, this is why you say, is San Francisco a good setting for noir? I mean, where else are you going to get a back alley face change if not San Francisco, right? I always joke that people come here to renew themselves and become the person they really want to be. How brilliant that Humphrey Bogart comes here and gets a completely new face.
And this is on Montgomery Street. I think Union and Montgomery is the intersection for many of these films.
It is. It is. Miguel and I actually do a film noir tour where we take people around. It's really his tour. I'm just the color guy on the tour. But that intersection at Union and Montgomery, we believe, is like the most photographed intersection in San Francisco. And also a location for characters to live, because obviously Bacall in Dark Passage lived right down the street on Montgomery. The house on Telegraph Hill, the fictitious house on Telegraph Hill, was located just down the street where Julia's castle was. Barbara Bel Geddes, right, in Vertigo.
Midge's apartment.
Is right there. Corner. And the sniper, Marie Windsor, lives right down the end of the block there where it turns to the right. Tony Curtis in The Midnight Story lived right there. And the market that used to be there, Speedy's Market on Union on the corner, was featured in a number of films. It's just amazing. I think it's because when you stand at the intersection and look east, you have a beautiful view of the Bay Bridge. When you face south, you're seeing downtown San Francisco. And when you face west, you have North Beach and the hills. And it's like the most photogenic intersection in the city.
Actually, Portrero Hill, Jim Van Buskirk, also appears in a lot of these films right where we are because of that sense of the multidimensional view. Yeah?
Exactly. And it reminds me of a quote that I read in Don Siegel's memoir where he said the reason he liked San Francisco so much is that you could not find a bad angle. No matter where you put the camera, you had either vistas or streets or water or hills. So he just loved shooting here.
Well, look at all the filmmakers that have used San Francisco for settings. I mean, as I go through your book, Jim, I mean, Recently, we had Phil Kaufman on. Of course, he won't go anywhere else. But Lucas and Coppola and Chris Columbus and going back, Hitchcock, obviously, and von Stroheim. I mean, the list of filmmakers and auteurs is extraordinary. Let's talk with you, though, Jim, about Chinatown, because that's part of this exhibit. You go back from all the stereotypes of Chinese characters right up to Wayne Wang and, in fact, Chan is missing, but also I was just thinking about the fact that the Joy Luck Club was filmed. Actually, they rented out my brother's house when he lived in the Richmond. You know, I mean, there are those people who had a friend who rented out his house for the TV series going way back the lineup. But Chinatown really has played a central role in the history. And I want to talk to you about that, Jim. I mean, you got a whole chapter on it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Lady from Shanghai, lots and lots of images, some of them using Chinatown as other, as exotic place. Mm-hmm. Often it's almost a parody. I mean, how many do we see Chinatown without seeing a dragon parade? often not. One of my favorite films when I first came to San Francisco was Flower Drum Song, which I was sure all took place in Chinatown. Well, I was saddened to learn that it was all a back lot. But yeah, Chinatown.
Well, let's hear a cut from Lady from Shanghai. We've got one.
Why did you do it, Michael?
I didn't. I'm not guilty.
Oh, the pills. You mean the pills? I saw you begging me to swallow them, begging me with your eyes. But you didn't mean for me to take them all, of course. So I have some back, but not enough. I took too many of the pills. I'm faint.
And now what?
But I've got to find something.
Don't you
first
know they'll
before
catch
I
you?
Faint.
Where do you
I've
think you can hide?
I've got to find that gun.
Gun? What?
I've got to find the gun that killed Grisby. It'll prove I'm innocent.
Orson Welles and Rita Hayworth. From Shanghai and the lady from Shanghai. And let me go back to what you've got in the exhibit on this just for a minute, Miguel.
Well, the lady from Shanghai, we talk about in the Chinatown Then and Now room how Chinatown was treated. And it was, especially coming after World War II, it was more positive than the real stereotypes that happened earlier, but it was just done with imagination and not used so much as a cliche. And we have a wonderful original poster from Lady from Shanghai also, which is from Gary Meyer's collection.
Yeah, who has more posters? Not that you're necessarily in competition here.
I don't really know. I've been to Gary's basement lair, and I've seen quite a few things that he has there. You know, Gary's been in the business as an exhibitor for so long that probably Gary has more posters, I would think. I'm very specialized, you know, Michael.
Yes, you are specialized.
I just have the noir posters.
Well, Jim Van Busker, I noticed you had an event earlier this month on location, the Golden Gate Bridge on the silver screen. And when we talk about the Golden Gate Bridge and just hit the major anniversary and all that, talking about a lot of movies, right? Planet of the Apes and Star Trek and Superman and Time After Time, It Came From Beneath the Sea, Love Bug, A View to Kill, and so it goes on and on. Monsters versus Aliens, Interview with a Vampire, X-Men.
I have about 30 clips in this show, which I started doing at the main San Francisco Public Library, obviously to commemorate the birthday of the bridge, and I'm still doing it at branches throughout the public library system. And it's been incredibly well received. I had 53 people at the Merced branch the other night. And my favorite part of it is people trying to stump me, and successfully, too, I'm happy to add. So I didn't know about Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Machine, for example, in which Vincent Price drives a cable car across the Golden Gate Bridge, chasing Frankie Avalon on a motor scooter. Or maybe it's Frankie Avalon chasing Vincent Price. I can't remember.
Well, if anyway, it's Frankie Avalon, they're trying to get to the beach, probably.
Probably. So, and all kinds of obscure films like The Man Who Cheated Himself,
yes,
with Lee J. Cobb stopping on the middle of the bridge and throwing the murder weapon into the drink.
Yeah,
I learned so much from your book, though. I mean, I didn't know, for example, that Sinatra's Nightclub and Pal Joey, which I saw many, many years ago as a young boy, was really the Spreckles Mansion in Pacific Heights. And we were talking before we went on the air about all the shooting that went on in The Godfather. I mean, there's a scene there where Diane Keaton meets Michael. She's with school kids and everything. It's right up here in Ross in North Bay. And there's so many scenes like that.
Right. Lots of times the Bay Area stands in for locations halfway across the world.
Yeah, she's supposed to be in New England in that
right.
scene.
So yeah.
Forth. Yeah. And then you've got the Towering Inferno.
Right. Which I use the opening sequence to that in this presentation because it's such a classic, the helicopter coming through the Golden Gate, looking down on the bridge, going through the fog, and then ending up downtown and into the this huge matte painting.
And American Graffiti is often associated with Mel's Drive-In, but it's not only Mel's Drive-In in San Francisco. It's up in Petaluma they shot?
No, it's the one in San Francisco.
No, I know, but they did a lot of shooting also
yes.
in Petaluma.
Right.
And in San Rafael, I think. They
right.
shot a lot of the picture in San
yeah.
Rafael.
What else? And Class Action was shot in the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, right?
Exactly.
Well, let me open the phone lines and also invite listeners. Memorable. What's memorable in terms of moments in San Francisco films, films about San Francisco, films that feature San Francisco? Do you have a celluloid moment or a favorite great moment in your own sort of archives in your mind of San Francisco film history or questions you might have? You might want to see if you can stump Jim Van Buskirk. Some of these films are pretty obscure. We welcome your calls. And a listener named Anthony, by the way, emailed the answer, hot dog. Is that right? It was a hot dog that he had?
That's correct.
Okay.
It was a foot-long
foot
hot
oh,
dog.
Okay. Well, you got it half right.
Think of the barrel of a .44 Magnum and think foot-long hot dog.
Yeah. Well, like Freud says, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. I want to reflect about your memories of San Francisco in the movies or how San Francisco is portrayed in the movies, or see if you can stump this crew here. And also, your greatest moment in San Francisco, celluloid, your picks. Our toll-free number is open to you now. It's 866-733-6786. There are a number of other ways to communicate with us, of course. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post your picks or any questions you might have or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page. And there are, of course, many memorable moments in San Francisco film history. There's an exhibit at the San Francisco Museum and Historical Society, The Stuff That Dreams Are Made Of, San Francisco in the Movies. It runs through June 24th at the Old Mint. The curator, Miguel Pendas, is with us. Also with us is Jim Van Buskirk, author of Celluloid San Francisco, The Film Lover's Guide to Bay Area Movie Locations, and Eddie Muller, founder and president of the Film Noir Foundation, which sponsors Noir City, the annual San Francisco Film Noir Festival, and several of those posters from his collection are on display at the exhibition. We're coming up on a break here. Anything else that people should know about the exhibition, Miguel?
There's so much. But one thing about coming to the exhibition is you're also going to get a glimpse of the Old Mint, which doesn't have to do that much with film, but you can see how the Old Mint is going to make a great museum someday.
Okay, and speaking of great, one of really the great movies, in my judgment, for whatever my judgment is worth, is The Conversation. And as we go out here, we're going to hear some music from it. When we come back, we'll take your calls, your emails. We'll hear from you, our listeners. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, as any good lover of schmaltz knows, that's Barry Manilow, but that's from the movie Foul Play with Goldie Hawn and Chevy Chase, which was filmed in San Francisco, and some of the most memorable moments in film history have been shot in San Francisco, from Madeline's plunge into the churning water at Fort Point and Hitchcock's Vertigo to Clint Eastwood's Dirty Harry scouring North Beach for a serial killer. There's a new exhibit at the San Francisco Museum and Historical Society celebrating the city's role in the movies, both as a favorite location and as creative hub. And you can join us and let us know what you think is the greatest moment in San Francisco celluloid. Email forum@kqed.org, Facebook. In fact, let me read some of the Facebook page entries that are coming in here. And let me remind you who's with us in studio, Eddie Muller, founder and president of the Film Noir Foundation. The exhibit has a whole Film Noir section to it. Jim Van Buskirk, author of Celluloid San Francisco, The Film Lover's Guide to Bay Area Movie Locations, and Miguel Pendez, board member of the San Francisco Museum and Historical Society, who curated the exhibit, which is, by the way, called The Stuff That Dreams Are Made Of, San Francisco and the Movies, and is at the Old Mint running through the 24th of June. Here's Rick, who says, Bullet isn't even the second best car chase in San Francisco movie history. That distinction belongs either to Foul Play or What's Up, Doc, depending upon which one you pick first, though my favorite scene might be Redford getting dumped out of a car at the top of Lombard Street on hide and sneakers. Redford should have been dumped out of more moving cars during his career. Well, come on, Robert. I love Robert Redford. Don't even go there. Mary says, Peter Bogdanovich's What's Up, Doc is an often overlooked film, but the performances are fantastic and feature San Francisco's hills in a hysterical car and bicycle chase, oh yes, and a Chinese dragon. And Meredith says, so, I Married an Axe Murderer has always been a favorite San Francisco movie of mine. While they went with the typical North Beach views, they also went with typical San Francisco exteriors and interiors. Has the Edinburgh Castle ever looked that nice? Gene writes, Blake Edwards' Experiment in Terror is one of my favorites. Genuinely frightening. Even the Henry Mancini soundtrack scared me as a kid. And the final chase scene takes place in Candlestick Park after a Giants-Dodgers game. Rod says the opening shot of the Dirty Harry movie Sudden Impact zooming in on the Golden Gate and revealing a murder scene. So some a little sampling of some favorites there. Alan writes, how about the murder scene in the Hyatt Regency at the Embarcadero in High Anxiety? How about it? It's there.
Yeah, that was scary.
Storm says, I wasn't listening from the beginning of the show, but are there films that are not generally known have taken place in San Francisco? Also, are there other areas in the wider Bay Area that have also been in the movies, aside from the Niles area for the early films? Well, what about that, Jim?
Well, yes. Throughout the greater Bay Area, up Santa Rosa was
Shadow of
a Doubt. Thank you, Eddie. Down to Carmel.
Was it the Coen Brothers film shot there too?
Probably. Yeah. One of my favorites is the house in Pollyanna with Haley Mills. It is in Santa Rosa, set on the East Coast, but shot here, and then a matte painting is the second and third floors. So the greater Bay Area is just rich with cinematic history.
Yeah, let's bring our callers into this discussion. We'll go to San Rafael. Chris, hi.
Hi, this is really great discussion. I'm enjoying it. There's one movie I wondered if you knew the title of. It's rather obscure. It's where Brian Donlevy plays a guy whose wife tries to kill him and ends up killing her lover instead. And he ends up in Idaho, which is Larkspur. Downtown Larkspur substitutes for Idaho in this movie. And the thing about it is it was made, I think, in 1948 or something, and Larkspur looks just the same.
Eddie could have named it in a nanosecond.
Yeah, it's called Impact.
And
Ella Raines plays the best-looking grease monkey of all time.
Yes, indeed. Which is now a show, and that billing station is still there, only it's a gift shop or something now.
That's right.
I didn't know that was shot in Larkspur. Okay, thank you for that. Let me go to more of your calls here, and we'll go to Menlo Park. Phyllis, hi.
Hi. I think I may have a sleeper. Down at the Stanford Theater, they show a lot of the great old movies, and they're having a Howard Hawks section. And since I'm an old San Franciscan, they were showing one called Barbary Coast. I saw it 2 weeks ago. It's unbelievable. 1935, San Francisco, set in the Gold Rush, and Miriam Hopkins, who I thought of as always playing old maids. Anyway, she plays a hot lady who comes down to marry a prospector in the Gold Rush and meets Joe McRae up in the Gold Country in a kind of silly way, but it shows the Gold Country, like she's out for a walk or something and gets to the Gold Country from San Francisco. Anyway, are you familiar with Barbary Coast, 1935?
A pretty well-known film of Howard Hawks.
Yeah.
But do you know what title it was re-released under?
No.
It was later called Port of Wickedness, which then they forgot and just went back to Barbary Coast.
It's so perfect because it's corrupt politicians and lawlessness and
yeah, nothing's changed. Yeah.
You name it, we've got it all.
Thank you, fellas. Our website, Dave writes, I like Wayne Wang's Chan is Missing and its realistic portrayal of Asian Americans in San Francisco, including the discussion of the Filipino town in the city that was disappearing at the time. And, of course, there's the obligatory car chase scene in Bullet. Miguel, maybe you can comment on this, on Wayne Wang. In your Chinatown exhibit.
Yeah, I really couldn't stress enough the importance of Wayne Wang and other Chinese American filmmakers like Lonnie Ding and Arthur Dong, who started making films themselves in the 1980s that really changed this whole way that Chinatown and Chinese Americans are portrayed in the movies. No matter how well-meaning the movies might be, like Flower Drum Song, they showed Chinese Americans and Chinatown from the inside, and they show them as real people within real situations. And it's just a wonderful thing to see that has just changed the way this is done in the movies.
Well, where were those old Charlie Chan films shot? Were some of them shot here in San Francisco?
Well, yeah, there was a Charlie Chan film called Charlie Chan at Treasure Island.
Oh, was it shot there, actually?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, there's some great footage of the Golden Gate exposition there in that film, which was released in 1939. And one of the interesting things about this film is that it's coming out at a time when the United States was in an alliance with China against Japan. So they had to curtail the racist images of Asians because they're trying to woo China as an ally. And suddenly Chinese Americans are portrayed positively in the films. It's the same thing that happened with Latin America. And the good neighbor policy, suddenly the Latin Americans are treated very nicely in the movies. Hollywood has always gone along with the politics of Washington.
Yeah, there have been treatises on that, some fascinating writing on that. Stanley Kaufman comes to mind, for example, about how politics shape the films that we see. Let me go to more of our callers.
I also want to point out that
Eddie Muller.
Victor Sen Young, who played Jimmy, the number one son in those Charlie Chan movies, was actually born here in San Francisco. He was a native San Franciscan who had quite a successful career in Hollywood as a character.
But they were both Caucasian. I mean,
Charlie Chan was always played by a Caucasian actor. It was,
Sidney Toler
or Warner Oland or somebody.
Almost all Caucasian
actors
playing Asians.
But Victor Sen Young, who played his son, was actually Chinese.
I'm seeing about all the Charlie Chans were Caucasian. Yeah. Selassie is our next caller. Good morning.
Hey, how you guys doing today? I enjoyed the conversation.
Good. Glad to have you.
I wanted to give you guys, I'm a San Francisco native too, and I'm a young brother. So I remember two movies that I was a part of San Francisco history. 48 Hours, when I was little, I used to stay in West Side up by Broderick, and they shot 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte all through my neighborhood when I was a kid. And that was really cool. And every time I drive by there, I always still remember that to this day. Like, that hasn't really changed too much. It's like a parking lot where Eddie Murphy was asleep and Nick Nolte came in and he slammed the door and he woke up. And that was right down the street from where I used to stay. So that was really cool.
But, the funny thing about that movie, 48 Hours, in terms of San Francisco, is Eddie Murphy wears a T-shirt with the name of a famous Detroit high school.
Well, and they're... Also, they turn a corner.
Oh, is that Beverly Hills Cop? Maybe that's Beverly Hills Cop. I'm sorry.
Well, in 48 Hours, it's
Cop. Yeah.
It's great because every so often they turn a corner and they're in L.A. with the L.A. buses and the L.A. theaters, and then they turn another corner and they're back in the Bay Area. So
The magic of the movies.
So, were you going to name something else, Selassie, or do you have a question?
Yeah, and Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. Like, they shot that. I had an old school 1970 Benz. And they wanted to use my car for the old school or whatever. And Will Smith was shooting right there on Wilder and Steiner. And all the fans were screaming for him. I'll never forget this. And he stopped in production and came over there and greeted us all and then went back to keep shooting. So those are two history of, black center, movie stars, Ann Fillmore and Hunter's Point, because you know, I try to represent that too, y'all. So,
yeah, you know. No, good. Good to hear from you. And some of those so-called black exploitation films were shot here too, weren't they, during the day? There's a whole that whole subgenre.
Oh, man, good, there's good one question. Classic one. Somebody has to call in and tell me, because there's one that was shot here that the name escapes me right now, but it was pretty priceless. I mean, right from the, you know, the era, the Black Panther era and everything, and it was, wow. There has to be a smart listener
somebody
out
knows.
There who knows the answer to this question. Well, tell all you cowboys, there's a new sheriff in town.
Here's Enrique, who says, Greed by von Stroheim. Again, I was asking moments that people remember the most. Nice shots of Polk Street and Cliff House with the windmills actually turning. Maltese Falcon, 1931 version. Liberty Bank open 24 hours on Market Street. Check the shipping news when they are looking for the Paloma. The ships are real. And by the way, you've got one of those copies of a copy of a copy of the Maltese Falcon in this exhibit. What, from the 41 movie, yeah?
Right.
This is from John's Grill.
Right. It came to us from John Constant of John's Grill. I call it an authentic reproduction of a genuine fake.
Yeah, there you go. That's even better than copy of a copy of a copy. Let me go to more of your calls, and we're going to go to Kathy next. Kathy, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Hi. I really enjoyed DOA, the 40s movie. And was he poisoned in... He was at a convention in San Francisco. That was my first question I had for you. And then could you also confirm, in Dark Passage, when Agnes Moorhead falls out of the building, is that apartment building up on, Steiner?
It's on Russian Hill. It's on Russian Hill. It's called the Tamil Pious Apartments. And it's on Hyde Street.
It's on Hyde Street.
At the very top of the hill.
Can you help her with the poisoning?
Well, if you can understand the plot of DOA, you're superhuman. but yes, he was actually poisoned at a fictitious bar on the waterfront right down across from the ferry building. The Fisherman was the name of the place in the movie. And remember, the suspicious-looking guy with the checkered overcoat trades Edmund O'Brien's drink. But if you can tell me why he was poisoned, that's miraculous. But there were some amazing on-location shots in that movie. His run up Market Street when he realizes that he's dying is a pretty amazing shot.
Well, let me thank Kathy for the call and go to more of your calls just a moment, though. Jim von Buskirk, you reminded me of... movie I saw a long time ago called Petulia, which did a lot of shots, a lot of good shots here.
Yes, and George C. Scott and Julie Christie and shots under the bridge and taking the ferry out into the bay. I remember the opening of the Cala Market on California and Hyde appeared in that film, and it's just about to be transformed into a Trader Joe's.
Here's Andy, who writes, my favorite San Francisco scene is in On the Beach, when submarine captain Gregory Peck speaks through the megaphone to the sailor who jumped ship in the dead radioactive city of San Francisco. Sorry, sir, I got a date on Market Street. Another listener, Will, says, the house on Telegraph Hill, they use the old restaurant, Julius Castle, for the exteriors, but there is a shot of the backyard of that house, which is actually the small garden on the south side of Coit Tower. And another listener puts on our website, Harold Maud, for the way it captured the Bay Area before the tech boom changed the landscape.
Alan, technically, on the Julius Castle thing and house on Telegraph Hill, that's exactly where they shot it, but they actually built the facade of the house around the restaurant. It did it overnight. It was astounding. So that's actually just a complete constructed
facade yeah.
around the restaurant itself.
And the backyard there is also the backyard of Nick and Nora Charles in After the Thin Man.
Alan says, any scene in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
Actually, no. Well, there's actually a couple. At the beginning, turning into the site where the house is supposed to be, we're in a car, and actually the Mel's Diner on Geary Boulevard. But the whole play takes place with a backdrop or a projection of the bay and the bridge.
I mean, are people aware of that? That in a lot of these instances, the exteriors are shot in San Francisco But the interiors are almost entirely done on sets in Hollywood.
Well, now they can all be digital. You don't even have to shoot exteriors anymore, right? Here's another listener, Michelle. Says, my favorite memorable moment is the first scene of Bullet, recently played on KQED, by the way. Not only do I love old San Francisco scenes, but my Nana, grandmother, is in that first scene serving hors d'oeuvres. The San Francisco home that is featured in the beginning of the film is where my mother grew up and where I would visit my grandparents. It's no longer a private residence, but a part of San Francisco history, originally built by my great-great-grandfather.
And my sister's in Bullet.
Is she? What's she doing in there?
She's at the Coffee Cantata on Union Street. She's in a scene. She's also in Dirty Harry. She plays the mayor's receptionist in Dirty Harry.
Well, that's one of my favorite things, is how the Hollywood movies inadvertently capture San Francisco at a certain time. So we get, you know, now that Union Square has been remodeled, well, we get scenes that took place there before it was, or in the lineup that we were talking about, you know, we see the ice skating rink at Sutro Baths, or the building of the Embarcadero Freeway. So all of these things that are long gone are preserved forever inadvertently in these wonderful movies.
Yeah, anyone born after like 1989 is going to look at the lineup and say, Where's that freeway?
Well, you particularly ought to get jolted by seeing a trip down Market Street if you go to the exhibit, what Market Street looked like back in 1906. Here's Cindy, who says, would you say a few words about the hotel used to be the Hotel York in the late 80s in the movie Vertigo?
Well, it was in the movie Vertigo, it was the Empire, and it actually had that neon sign, and it was green, that put the neon glow into the room of the Judy Barton character. And Hitchcock, in that movie in particular, was very faithful to the interiors. Now, they did not shoot inside those places, but when they were recreated on the soundstage in Los Angeles, they were very true to what the interiors really look like. And one example is the Hotel Empire, so you could actually go there and stay in Judy's room, and it will look just like in the movie.
Did anybody ask Kim Novak when she was here about working with Hitchcock? Because Tippi Hedren and, as far as I know, Kim Novak have both talked about, you know, how difficult and even cruel he could be. Did any of that come up? I'm just curious.
Yeah, not really. But they've been pretty kind to Hitchcock. I think it's other people that documented what happened. They really talk well of him and say it was a great thing in their careers that they could work with such a great artist.
Now, here's a listener named Wayne who says, it may not be the best known, but for me, one of the great iconic moments in San Francisco is in Phil Kaufman's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where Robert Duvall, in a cameo role as a priest, is seen on a swing set in Alamo Square Park. Mm. Classic Kaufman, as is the film in its dark humor. And by the way, Robert Duvall plays a Russian in Hemingway and Gellhorn, the new Phil Kaufman film that was done for HBO. Michelle says, the Birdman from Alcatraz, where was that shot? Was it in Alcatraz?
Absolutely not. No. There's shots of Burt Lancaster going back on the ferry, but the whole thing is a set. But Phil Kaufman uses the city in a wonderful way. And Invasion of the Body Snatchers is one of my favorites because he uses both the interiors and the exteriors, like the Department of Public Health, for example. And so he doesn't cheat. Everything is geographically consistent. If it takes, you know, 20 blocks to get across town, that's about how much.
But on the limited budget with HBO, he had to shoot at the old Oakland train station, for example. It was supposed to be Finland. I mean, there were things that crossed over in that way. But he was able to take all of those scenes and transmogrify them in the Bay Area, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, we're all over the world.
It was quite brilliant. I actually recognized the train station. I had been there not long before. And as soon as they walked into that hotel, I said, I know where this is. Said, oh, my God, it's the West Oakland train station.
More of your calls. We go to Gualala and welcome you, Frederick. Hi.
Good morning. There's a film that hasn't been mentioned, and I think it's probably one that a lot of people have forgotten about. It's Alan Arkin and James Caan, Freebie and the Bean. Great, great, crazy comedy. Great scene. My favorite scene from that whole film is when they're in pursuit on an elevated section of the freeway. They lose control. Their car goes off the freeway and ends up in some people's bedroom.
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Cars in San Francisco. It's so funny. I mean, it's a city that you hate to drive in. So, like, why are there all these car chases in these movies?
And Tom joins us next. Tom, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. I was just wanted to talk about a recent obsession of mine, which is movies which feature the destruction of the Golden Gate Bridge. And do you have any count on how many times the Golden Gate Bridge is destroyed? I know it's X-Men and Monsters and Aliens, and it gets beat up in the Planet of the Apes movie, but I was just...
Jim, do you have a tally?
Well, I don't have a tally, but don't forget It Came from Beneath the Sea.
Yeah,
that's one of the best ones. Superman has to rescue the bus full of kids that's going to go careening off. Yeah, there's just dozens of them, and I have all of them in the film clip show that I've been doing at the public library branches, and I do them in chronological order so that you can just see one after another of the bridge being threatened by terrorists or monsters or both.
Well, you know what, that bus scene with all the kids made me think of Chowchilla, which, again, you connect some of these events to films that are made. And, in fact, the youngest member of that group was just released on parole, Richard Schoenfeld. Let me get another caller who remembers I Remember Mama, which I remember, too. Jennifer, hi.
Hi there. I wanted to second what folks said about Foul Play and Harold and Maude. Having grown up in San Francisco in the 70s, those just pull at my heartstrings because they remind me of being a kid. But a few years ago, I finally got to see I Remember Mama, and I was blown away by what a great movie it was, and it was so wonderful to see San Francisco maybe imperfectly represented in that period. But
was the TV series also filmed in San Francisco? Does anybody know? Because there's a film series, a TV
right.
series based on the film.
I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
I didn't know anything about the series, just that the movie was, you know, a nice slice of San Francisco history from sort of an immigrant perspective.
I hear the nostalgia in your voice. they were Scandinavians.
Norwegians.
Norwegians, right. Yeah.
Thanks for the show.
Thank you, Jennifer. And let me go to some more of your emails. Bruce writes, I responded to a casting call for the Doors movie. The San Francisco concert scene with the bonfire was shot over two nights in a park above San Mateo. I was one of 2,000 people in the crowd listening to a clip of the same song over and over.
Yeah, that's the magic of the movies.
And here's Roberto, who says, please mention this movie shot in the Mission District and dealing with issues of homophobia and gentrification in San Francisco's Mission District, featuring many homegrown locals as actors and extras. This movie was written and directed by Peter Bratt and features Ben Bratt in a lead role. The Bratt brothers are local San Francisco boys, graduated from Lowell and McAteer, and they were on this program actually talking about that movie, which is called La Mission.
Yeah, and you know, actually, La Mission is a film we showed at the San Francisco International Film Festival on opening night when I was working for the festival a few years ago. And the other thing, the other film I think is worth mentioning, made locally, is Medicine for Melancholy, a film by Barry Jenkins. All of the characters are African American, and that was a real effort to. Talk about African Americans from the inside, so to speak, like Wayne Wong's films talking about Chinese Americans from the inside. It was a really nice little gem, that film.
Well, I'll give another plug for your the exhibit that you curated, because there is stuff about the San Francisco International Film Festival in your exhibit.
There is. There's a whole section on the International Film Festival, the oldest one in the Americas, and we have the actual banner from the festival that the stars pose in front of. And in front of the banner, we have a wax figure of Clint Eastwood. So you can go down there and take your picture with Clint Eastwood on the red carpet at the festival. And we have an original poster by Saul Bass, the great graphic designer who designed posters for the festival.
Were you there in the Peter Scarlett era?
I was. In fact, it was Peter Scarlett who hired me to work at the festival. And then we have a great collection of photographs by Pamela Gentile that she's been taking for over 25 years at the festival.
And we go to more of your calls. Peggy, join us. Hi.
It's Peggy in Oakland. And back in 1971 at the San Francisco airport, back in the days when you could actually go to the gate to meet people, I guess the plane was late, and we went to the tiki bar that was there for a drink, and outside they were filming scenes from What's Up, Doc, Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neill. So years later, when I saw it on TV, I'd say, I was behind that screen. And then probably 74 or 75, they were filming Funny Lady at the old Oakland train station. another Barbra Streisand movie. So.
Yeah, it's amazing what people remember about, I mean, we're hearing a number of these calls, what they observed, what they saw when shooting was going on. I remember my brother saw, remember Ed Kooky Burns, Kooky, sure. Lend Me Your Coat, some obscure film that was filmed in San Francisco and brought attention to it. Here's Tom in Santa Rosa says, as someone who grew up in the Deep South during Anita Bryant's reign of terror on America's homosexual community, the naivete of my youth was shattered when I watched Sean Penn in Milk. The film informed me, moved me, and made me grateful for my eventual escape from the Deep South. Was the movie actually filmed in the city? Great show and a shining example of what makes the Bay Area so great. Thank you, Michael, and the guests.
Yeah, lots of it was filmed in the Castro District. And I remember walking around and I thought I was in a time warp because the whole neighborhood had been transformed back to the 70s and bars that I remembered. So it was kind of deja vu.
Oh, yeah.
It was fascinating.
A little spooky maybe too, huh?
The movie company renovated the Castro Theater mm-hmm. itself to look like it looked back in the 70s.
Well, actually, my boyfriend managed the Castro Theater in those days, and he said, well, I have to tell you that the marquee was never that color.
Yeah. Never looked quite that good.
Right.
The important question from Joan before we conclude here, and I think this is to you, Jim. Speaking of the Greater Bay Area, what movies has Oakland been in?
Let's see.
Well, there's a noir film, Where Danger Lives, where they actually go to a tiki bar that was supposed to be the original Trader Vic's, which was in Oakland. Yeah. And so...
The Graduate was filmed in Berkeley, wasn't it?
Correct.
And The Wrong Way on the Bay Bridge.
Oakland. We'll get some emails on that, I'm sure. Some
oh, there's a Clint Eastwood movie. He worked at the Tribune.
What was the name of that?
We'll get these on our website. And you can, by the way, put your favorite celluloid San Francisco or Oakland moment on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on our Facebook page. Thank you so much, you guys. It's been a lot of fun. Eddie Muller, again, true crime. There we go.
That was it. Yeah.
Founder and president of the Film Noir Foundation, Jim Van Buskirk's book is Celluloid San Francisco, The Film Lover's Guide to Bay Area Movie Locations, and Miguel Pendas. The exhibit, again, is The Stuff That Dreams Are Made Of, San Francisco in the Movies. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.